Good morning, everyone. This is the regular meeting of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District Improvements Committee of January 4th. The meeting is called to order. Next up on the agenda looks like something for Tom.
Or I can take it. Consider finding as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, one, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees, and authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code 54953 subsection E1C. So this item is just an opportunity for the committee member to let us know that they wish to hold the meeting via teleconference this morning.
Good with that, Martin.
That's my desire.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to go ahead and mute all my friends who are out there. So if you have something to say, please raise your hand or unmute yourself and speak.
All right. Comments from the public. Are there any hands, chats, or other comments, Amelia?
There are none.
Amelia, this is John.
There is one. Hi, John. Good morning.
Morning. Not for today, but I'd like to make sure it gets on the agenda at the regular meeting. Michael, this has to do with the water and recycled water use matrix. You know, in the old board packet, we used to get the detail of what was used by customer type. And I'd like to suggest that that matrix get expanded, since theoretically we're supposed to come up with a recycled water rate at some point in time. And that probably means that your team needs to provide some information for the board packet. And that at the end of the day, I guess the finance committee would need to hold a finance meeting, committee meeting, in regard to the recycled water rate. So I just want to get that out there. It's January. If anybody has any additional requests, this usually was in the board packet after all the committee reports, and some of it was put together by admin, and then it was transferred over to operations, field operations. It also included all the detail on reserves and up and down on the budget expenses, that section of the monthly budget. So I would request that we figure out what that matrix, hopefully it could be expanded so we know the difference between housing types. I know this is going to become an issue when we get to auxiliary dwelling units and how much water capacity that may or may not take down the road. And it would be good to have the data by housing type available to do that, so that the board has the information they need to make a knowledgeable decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any problem with that, Mike, or do you want to just wait to study it to figure out if that's a problem or not?
I mean, I'll take a look at what we have done in the past. I mean, I've seen some information. I think that does come from admin, and I would say that the data isn't, it's hard to read and really hard to understand. So I don't trust it yet. That's why I haven't been including it. But I will take a look at our data and see if we can't provide something like John's talking about.
Okay. Just for a second, Michael, on the old report, they never put the unit of measure on the water use done residentially. It was always thought to be in the billing rate, which would be CCFs, so that they have a total number of CCFs that are done, that are used, and then It's converted to gallons per day to look at how we're doing versus the 20 by 2020 mandate by the state. And then they started out the year with a planned usage gallons per day. And that stayed static during the whole year. But as we went through the year, the gallons per day got re-averaged every month. And typically it shows somewhere between 400 and 450 gallons per day across the residential users. And then more recently, they added a commercial side, which is quite valuable because we do have, you know, somewhere between 15 and 22% of our demand either is commercial or parks or CSD, you know, backwash and those kind of things.
Yeah, I do agree that the commercial needs to be separated out.
This is Tom, and we're working on revitalizing those numbers as we prepare to do the budget, which is taking place over the next few weeks. So I think you'll start seeing those numbers again. Like Michael said, they're kind of difficult to get to because of the folks who used to run those numbers and work those systems are no longer here, but we're taking the time to train ourselves on how to pull those numbers out of our billing system. So we should be all right.
One other thing that is an outgrowth of that, this is for the board members, but another outgrowth of that is that we're supposed to determine on an annualized basis what our gallons, what gallons we consider to be an EDU on the residential side. So I don't know if that's relevant anymore. We haven't done it in a long time, but the 20 by 2020 would take that 750 EDU that is embedded in all the old documents, the acquisition and services agreement and all the documents going back to when the water plants were financed by Improvement District Number 1, down to 600 gallons per day with 20% savings. So at some point in time, if the district is going to try to perform to the 20 by 2020 mandate, it's got to be reported somewhere. Otherwise, if it's not reported, once we roll into that 3,000 customer count in the district, we're going to be under scrutiny.
No, that's fine. And John, what you mentioned with the Improvement District Number 1, that's a very old document, and we'll find the last time that we produced the document you're talking about. Sounds like they haven't been completed for a number of years, so we'll add that to our research.
Thank you.
Very good. Amelia, any other comments?
No, there are no hands, no chats.
Very good. Let's move on to the monthly update, Mike.
Okay, thank you. Well, I've been working with my staff in an effort to update replacement values and useful life of various components that we have in our system, including water, storm, drain, and sewer infrastructure. We're doing this so we can get an adequate, at least a really good first shot at what we should be putting away for reserve every year. Through that process, I'm discovering a lot of critical issues with some of our infrastructure. Nothing to be completely alarmed by, but that's in part where my lift station memorandum comes into play. Just some of the things I've discovered with staff that we will address sooner than later. And I, you know, I don't mean to scare anybody with the things that I've come up with, but they are things that need to be addressed. And I just wanted to give you a heads up that you'll be seeing requests for funding for these items in the near future. For our SB 170 funded products, we are moving forward with those. We've got a meeting with West Yost, I believe, next week to kick off the UV versus sodium hypochlorite disinfection analysis for the wastewater treatment facility. We currently still have an RFP out for our water treatment facility sodium hypochlorite conversion. So I should be bringing something to the February improvements, some of the responses. And I'm waiting to hear back from HDR on a quote for design for the Grandless Intake Safety Project. For Laguna Joaquin, Marty, I don't believe we have a meeting set up with RMA.
No, but I hope it's soon.
Yeah, maybe I'll follow up with them, see what's going on.
Yeah, I too haven't heard from Kevin Hubert. I'll send him an email and ask him what the status is. So,
all right. Sounds like, yeah. All right. Just so some of the, we'll discuss the lift stations the next agenda item. I'll just kind of give you guys a quick update on the other pieces of infrastructure that we've been talking about last few months. For the water distribution system, we had that 8-inch valve that the board had approved for emergency project. We've got that scheduled. We're going to have 5 good days of weather starting next Monday, so the contractor's going to begin this coming Monday. Let's see. Our plant water pumps, I believe I informed the board, the manufacturer's taken one of the pumps for sandblasting and recoating. And we're going to be testing it out when we go back online in the spring. So I'm hoping that that is a good solution. For our main lift south stormwater pumping PLC issue, the PLC has been successfully reprogrammed to allow the pumps to operate properly. Eventually, we will have to replace the PLC as it is obsolete, but that can occur on down the line. Let's see, the back pulse pumps at the water treatment plant one. So water treatment plant two is in the process of being put back online. We did some minor repair on the filter bed, add some additional sand. This will allow us to take down water treatment plant one and start recoding, pulling the back pulse pumps and recoding them. Those back pulse pumps, apparently, part of the coating in the volutes was breaking off and getting into the membranes and shearing the membranes. So we're hoping that this recoat job will solve that problem. Our tertiary wet well feed pumps back at the wastewater treatment plant, these are the pumps that lift the secondary treated water up to the tertiary treatment plant. They were pulled and made available for inspection. We have received 3 quotes, Kirby Pump being the low bid. I just received this yesterday. We'd like to move that forward for approval by the board in February so we can have the lead time needed to get those repaired and put in place. So we'll have plenty of time to start up our recycled water. So those are pretty critical.
What's the target date for the pumps to be back in service?
I'd like those back in service when we can start making recycled water, which I believe, off the look, I think it's like April or May, whenever that season starts. So sooner the better. The Clementia subdrain pumps, the pump starters have been replaced. Now, while the subdrain station is operational, the pump controller that's alternating switch was found to be burned out and we'll need to replace it. This allows the pumps to cycle back and forth. So we need to get that fixed, but we are the pump station is operational.
Do you mind spending 2 minutes explaining what that whole system does?
Oh, the Clementia subdrain?
Yes, please.
Yeah, well, there is a, it's like a, it basically makes sure that the dam is basically stays unsaturated. if you will, that supports the structural integrity of the Clemencia Dam. So if you let the water stay in that sand chimney, it could potentially cause issues.
So does it seep out of the dam face and body into a wet well?
It's like more of a sand collared well. I believe it's filled with sand. The seepage from the sides.
And it's evacuated to where?
I don't know that. I can get that information for you.
Thank you. Is this that big round beige installation below Clemencia there in the weeds?
It most likely is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we have subdrain pumps in Claro and Clemencia. It's a pretty standard preventive maintenance feature for a dam.
Okay.
It's pretty important.
Okay. Thank you.
So while these switches are out, are we manually switching pumps back and forth, or how, what's happening there?
I don't think we really need to. You know, it's more of just putting equal amount of hours on each pump. I believe we're going to replace the switch before we, you know, load up one pump with too many hours. You're trying to keep the hours balanced. That's why they do the switching. Like any pump station.
Okay.
So for our membranes, we have increased the chemical membrane cleaning as per manufacturer, and that has been effective in keeping our transmembrane pressure down and our log removal value up. As I previously mentioned, we were getting some shear from the coating chips coming from the back pulse pumps. And so we're going to rehab those pumps or re-coat those pumps to prevent that shearing in the future. So we're going to be taking plant one down here pretty soon. We are going to be doing one back pulse pump at a time. In case we get into problems with plant two, we'll be able to start plant one back up with the back pulse pump. So we're being very careful with that. We still need to deal with the manganese or the potassium permanganate, which stains the cover of the membranes. So when we go to repair the membranes, those covers get in the way of the UV curing, as you can see. The manganese is typically a summer problem. What's interesting is plant two does a very good job removing manganese, and plant one, not so much. I think, you know, in the future, when we take a look at, you know, expanding the plant, we probably need to include some type of pre-manganese removal prior to the membranes. And so this is more of a long-term process that we need to probably take a look at. Manganese is removed using potassium permanganate, which makes the manganese form larger particles and settle out. And usually that's done in the sedimentation basin. And I think that's why plant two does a better job getting rid of the manganese. So that's just something we have to take a look at. I want to get a quote for membrane replacement because we are getting close to the end of our useful life for those membranes. So any questions on the membranes?
Yeah, costs. Do these membranes obviously were all placed at the same time, so I'm assuming they'll all be replaced at the same time, or can we phase the purchase of them over time? And And what are we looking at for costs? Just magnitudes. I know you got to get quotes on them, but what's the magnitude of the cost of these things?
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't be able to give you an accurate even magnitude cost. I don't know. Okay. I'm assuming that we could phase in the replacement. And we can take a look at the cost to do that versus the cost of just full replacement.
When you look at these, is it apparent that some of them are obviously need to be replaced and some of them are in better shape, or do they all look about the same?
You know, I couldn't tell you that. We take a look at things like, I mean, the membrane's really hard to see. So it's more of like, we take a look at the log removal effectiveness, if they're starting to lose membranes more frequently, that's an evidence. Most of my membrane experience is in the wastewater side, but they're fairly similar. When the membrane stops performing like it used to, and it starts requiring more and more and more repairs, that's when you know you're getting towards the end.
Got it.
Thank you. These membranes modular?
Yes, they are modular.
So you could replace one module at a time if you really wanted to, right?
Yeah, you could. And, you know, that's the whole beauty of what the district selected originally is the expandability of the membranes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, I would say that's possible. I'm hesitant to say what would be the best thing to do without any cost in front of me. But that is something we need to take a look at soon, because, you know, year-wise, we are getting close to the, 7 to 10 year lifespan.
Is this a potential project for this year or next year?
I think we can take a, yeah, I don't think, it doesn't, to me, from what, I, what I'm gathering from the operators, it doesn't feel like an emergency. Mm. It's something that we need to start paying attention to and planning for.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, moving on to site development. Riverview mass grading is complete. I guess there is one area that they still need to dynamite later. I'm not sure what they're gonna do with that. When the weather improves, they're gonna start water and sewer installation. And I believe they plan on developing the first 5 lots off of Reynosa. Retreats, we had an update yesterday. They're basically shutting down most of the site. They were issued an NOV by the district for their best management practices for stormwater were not effective, and there was sediment leaving the site. So we had to issue them an NOV. K-Hob responded with what looks like a satisfactory response. They addressed our issues and they are hydroseeding. I think they're gonna be hydroseeding the entire site from what we've seen yesterday. And they're gonna be shutting down the grading on the, I guess it's the north area, and just gonna be doing, from what I understand, construction on the southern area.
The east.
Or east, yeah.
Michael, I want to jump in real quick. We talked to the folks from K-Hob. This is Tom Hennig, by the way. We talked to the folks from K-Hob about the piles of lumber and tree branches that were created when they did their tree mitigation. And their plan was to bring equipment on site and to chip it and haul it away. However, the rain that we got over the past 2 weeks has interfered with them being able to put the equipment on the property. So if it dries out enough to put heavy equipment there, they'll probably try and haul that stuff away, but we may be stuck with that, those piles of trees and branches for the duration of the winter because of, you know, the amount of rain we've gotten. So, you know, it's a real big plus that we get all this rain and we don't have to worry about water, but there are some inconveniences, such as those piles of trees that are going to be there for quite a while. So if that comes up, there was never their plan to leave them there. If it hadn't rained so much, which we desperately needed, that property would be nice and smoothly graded, and the hydroseed would have gone on top of smooth ground instead of roughed up ground, just because of the timing of the rain. I just want to make that comment.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Mike, did the storm water that left the site, did that end up in our drainage system?
It did.
Okay.
And we've requested that they provide us with a copy of the testing for any of the turbidity and pH for any storm water that's leaving and going into the consumers. So we'll have copies of that as well.
Okay.
Michael, can you describe where the turbid water ended up mostly?
Most of it ended up in we have a small stormwater detention basin right before the consumness. And then there is another, I don't know what golf hole it is, but there's a
number two.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of it ended up at number two and that's hydraulically connected to our stormwater detention basin. And from there, there's, I believe it's an eight inch knife valve that's opened, and that goes to the consumers.
Where would they do the testing then for turbidity?
They would either do the testing where the end of that 8-inch pipe is or going into the 8-inch pipe.
And when do we expect those results?
They're supposed to give them to us by the end of today per the NOV.
Okay. I'd be interested in not the test results, but just something from you that says, yeah, it's okay, or no, they got a problem here and they need to report it.
Oh, you mean with the state?
Yeah.
That's going to go to Water Smart already, isn't it?
Yes, they would upload it in Smarts.
Okay.
The main thing is we did our due diligence in catching this from happening and requiring them to correct it. I'm moving on to Taco Bell. I believe grading utility installation is slated to begin in mid-January. The airport hangar civil construction is complete. And Circle K shell, there's been no updates. If there's no questions, we'll move on to the lift station memo. And I don't need to read this line by line. We can just discuss these items if you'd like. Everybody's read it. It's as you wish.
Randy, are you ready to move on from the report to the next item?
I am. Let's move on. Martin, unless you've got anything on the report, let's.
No, I'm good.
Let's move on to the lift stations.
Okay. So,
And I think we all have read it.
Okay.
Maybe if you just want to touch on each one quickly, and then we can have a discussion about, it looks like each one's got a proposed solution. And
my
only questions as you go through this would be the timing on these solutions and what we're looking at as far as timing taking care of these problems.
Yeah, a couple of these I'd like to do fairly soon. And then, you know, the remainder we're looking at next fiscal year. A lot of these issues have been around for a while. And we're just gonna move forward with getting those fixed. So the Alameda station, as you know, serves the pro shop, the snack bar during the summer. It doesn't run a lot. and it's oversized, and there's corrosion, probably because it's oversized and creates too long retention time, which creates hydrogen sulfide, which causes the corrosion. It's also a single pump lift station. Pump is obsolete, according to our mechanic, and not currently replaceable off the shelf. So there's really no redundancy built into this system for failure. The panel also has rust issues. We have recently replaced check valve in 2019 due to that corrosion, and the electrical isn't coming in a true 220. So my proposed solution is to probably get a prepackaged single grinder or duplex grinder pump station. If we go single grinder station, we would move forward with the manufacturer that's completely supported, a modern station, something to where if there's an issue, there's some room in the pump station, they drive over from Sacramento, pull the pump, put a new pump in, fix it. Either one of those. There's some flexibility on how we could put that pump station in, especially if it is a grinder. You know, the discharge could be a lot smaller, a little easier to tie in. Let's see, the starter shack, I believe, just serves the bathroom on the south course, and it pumps sewage into a force main from main lift north. This is a really old prepackaged lift station. It has pretty rare to see these days, the tank that's bolted together. They stopped doing that because sometimes those fail, seals fail, end up with leaking. I'm not sure. I don't think that's happening, but it's also another single pump lift station. That the issue here, the main issue, is it cannot, it's old, but it cannot actually pump sewage in the force main while the main lift north is pumping, which, you know, is not a good thing. There's several, I think at least two check valves, I've been told, from that force main to the main lift north force main. If those check valves ever failed, that little station would fill up, overflow, and go right into the consumers. So we need to get out there, take a look. How many check valves do we have? How old are they? And probably replace that station with something that has enough horsepower to pump into the force main from main left north.
Is that the problem? You can't create enough head to get it into the force main while main left north is operating?
Yeah, correct. Okay. You know, main left north doesn't operate all the time, and so when it's done, you know, it's still trying to pump, right? So it, when main lift north is done pumping, then it goes into the force main. But I think, yeah, I mean, that's an issue in its own, but the more significant issue, in my opinion, is we need to take a look at those check valves. Because that's really a situation that could cause a catastrophic issue with raw sewage going into the consumers. If both of those check valves fail.
How big is the well?
I don't know how big it is. It's probably not very big.
Probably only a few hundred gallons.
That'd be my guess. So it's not going to take a lot of money to fix, but it's something that should be done. Well, let's see, lift 3B. This is a single phase duplex station. That means two pumps. It's originally designed to serve 15 to 20 residential homes. It's now connected to the water treatment facility. And there are times that it has difficulty keeping up with the flow. We have no spare pumps for the station. And we can no longer procure spare pumps. control panel is very dated and doesn't actually have control algorithms. It's old school on off.
This is on the sixth fairway or five fairway, unit six.
You know, right? I don't know all the fairways yet. I just know it's, I believe it probably is if it's serving the water treatment facility.
I think it's all the low lying houses around the fourth green and the fifth tee of the unit six, the fairways. Is that 3B?
Tom, can you speak to that? Do you know?
You know what? Give me a second. I'm looking at our GIS map. I was thinking it's either the one by Clementia or it's the one over by the greens John's talking about, but let me find it real quick.
My map that Paul gave me once shows it over by Chesbro.
Over by what, Martin?
Chesbro.
Yeah, it's that one by...
You go up the parkway and turn right.
That thing's obsolete, isn't it? That thing can be abandoned when Village C goes in because it won't be needed, right?
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's my understanding is that when Baker Williams put the design together for Village C, that 3B lift station becomes obsolete.
Yeah, I mean, just a second.
I'm not sure what the timing is for that.
Well, I don't know where he's placing it either, but might be a good idea to find out, huh?
Okay, I'll tell you in just a second where it is.
It's right there on Clementia Drive and De La Villa, let's see, Camino del Lago. Camino del Lago and Clementia Drive.
Oh, that's right. That's where it shows on the map I have.
Yeah. Just before you leave the paved surface going toward Clementia Park. Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's right there. It's got a 6-inch pipe coming out of it. It squeezes down to 4 after a little bit.
Okay.
So, John, what can you tell us about the timing of Village C and how much work we want to put into Lift 3B if it's going to be no longer needed?
Let's find out. I'll ask Mike Robertson to give us an idea what the size is projected to be for the replacement, and if it turns out that it is it's not a gigantic facility. Michael, you recommend packaged plants, right?
Well, it depends on the situation. I would say if that development wasn't happening, you know, we would move forward and just modernize the station, the existing station. You know, I don't know how many homes are going into it, but, you know, we'd have to take a look at the wet well size.
Right.
You know, we would definitely, I mean, we could, not knowing the geography, we could do a pump replacement, update the service to 3-phase, get a panel in, and serve the existing condition. And then if, you know, there was a development that came in 5 or 10 years or whenever, we would potentially be able to just upgrade the pumps. I don't know how much.
I think the problem is that it's lower, you know, it's down on the unpaved portion down near the entrance to Clementia Park, so that you would just connect that 3B volume to a new station that's down near the toe of Bass Lake.
So the development is lower than the station.
Yeah. So maybe we should put that on our monthly meeting with Mike and talk about what the volumes are, and then you and he can collaborate on what the station would look like.
Well, if there's, it's one of those tough situations, right? We don't know if the development's happening. or not for sure. Maybe we do, but in the interim, like, things need to be addressed.
Yeah, but at the very least, you need to know what the final configuration of the system's going to look like. So I like the idea of putting a little more research into this to figure out where this fits in the overall before we decide how much money we want to spend to keep 3B up and running.
Well, I think you're right, Randy. I think it's the difference between, you know, fully updating the station or just doing surgical reconditioning to keep it functional.
Yeah. So that John's plan sounds good. getting with the engineer and taking a look at how this fits into the overall before you make any decisions on this, we can come back to it.
Oh yeah.
Let's move on to Bent Grass Court.
All right. So this is a green lift station. The area surrounding this station looks like it's settled. I don't know if the wet well is settled, but clearly the asphalt area around, you can see the pictures, has settled. And even one of the panels is starting to settle. And I just think it's when they probably when they put that in, they didn't compact properly. So we need to take a closer look at this. I suggest one of the things that we may want to take a look at is getting out there and removing some of that asphalt and checking on our pipes to make sure that, you know, our pipes aren't going to, you know, get damaged at any of the joints, and then build back the soil, compact it properly, and probably put a new layer of asphalt on. But I think it would probably be wise to remove the material, take a look at what's going on, and then recompacting it, and basically just correcting the sinking around the lift station. Next is 6A. This is located in the northeast portion of De La Cruz Drive.
And that's the fifth fairway.
Yeah, those pictures you see right there are the ones from the greens that Michael was just talking about.
Right. It shows those are from the greens.
That's a stormwater lift station, right?
It's also a lift station, I believe.
That's not sewer. Yeah. That's stormwater, right?
No, this is sewer. The green? It's
sewer and stormwater.
There should only be one or the other. I think that's just the sewer lift station. The one that we're looking at?
On the greens?
Yeah, green.
Okay.
I think it's called Green Lift Station. I'm just learning all this stuff. So if I...
It's called the Greens Lift Station.
The greens. Okay, got it. So moving on to Lift Station 6A, there's also been some settlement around that lift station. And the same recommendations I make with greens, I make with 6A. This is another one of the stations that has a single phase with capacitor packs that I'm told by a mechanic look like they're going to fail sooner than later. I want to make sure that the discharge piping hasn't become compromised. And I think we want to probably take a look at bringing that station up to three phase, the service up to three phase. Either upgrade the pumps. We want to evaluate the soil around the station, see if there's an additional settlement, and recompact. Just make sure everything's right. All right, so Kentova. Here's, I've seen that we budget for this in the past. So this is something I could probably move forward with sooner than later.
Yeah.
There's an old 1950s towable generator with only one functional leg. We would hate for this generator to fail during a power outage and leave that lift station inoperable. The spill area would include Marietta Village and Kentova Marietta Drive. Basically, you just need to replace the generator. And I would also advise installing an automated transfer switch, an updated panel. So that's something I think that was previously budgeted for, we could potentially move forward with sooner than later.
Hey, Michael, I have a quick question. When we replace that generator, do you think we can put the hardware inside the fenced area?
Sure.
You know, I'd have to take a look. I'd have to take a look at the generator size and the fence area. But I mean, we would want to do that.
The district has an easement there to do, to expand the fenced area if you want to.
Correct. Yeah, I think having that trailer sitting there is not the best solution, and it's part of the upgrade. I think we need to secure it better.
Yeah, we'd want to.
I agree. I've always wondered about that generator sitting there like that. It sure doesn't make us look good, for one thing. And we really need to clean up that. We really need to clean up that site as part of this project, make it look presentable.
Correct. And that's already been approved as a CIP, and I've asked Michael to start moving on it.
The parcel is owned by OE3, but you have an easement there.
Well, that's helpful.
That old generator looked like it was an antique when they had it there in the first place 40 years ago.
It was probably a lot of public agencies used to buy Army surplus. It's possible that may have come from there.
Yeah.
But on the side of it, it's got the name of a company that's owned by a local resident. And I'm sure that there was a deal made somewhere. There, yeah. That we probably don't want to dig too deep into.
I think we also want to take a look at the FAA lift station. That's located in the west end of Kentova Way. Serves the business park. And I'm told that this lift station doesn't have a generator.
I don't think that's true.
It's not true?
I think there used to be a generator inside that fence.
Used to be?
Let's just say the following. That lift station lifts all of Kentova Way's stormwater over the levee that is on the back side of that lift station over the CIA ditch and into the agricultural property, which is an easement that's granted by the landowner there. And that is part of the overland release. So Mike Robertson probably could be more articulate about what that, the performance of that Kentova Way lift station is, but it's pretty essential. If we were out of power for 6 hours in a 25-year or 50-year storm, we'd be in a little bit of trouble.
You know, John, I'm looking at the map of our sewer lines and I can see what you're talking about. This is Tom, by the way. The equestrian center sewer goes over the CIA ditch right there past the hay barn and into the area for the village. I don't know if that lift station is pushing or pulling from there.
The Kentova lift?
Not the Kentova, but the FAA lift station. The Kentova lift station definitely.
The FAA lift station is a stormwater lift station.
Oh, no, I thought there's a sewer lift station there that serves the.
So are there two?
I believe so. Let me check.
John, you may be right because there's really no sewer going into it from where it starts.
The sewer all goes the other direction down the Kentova lift, but the drainage goes the other direction down the street inside the entire levee area of the village and Cantova Way ends up draining in that basin. And it, the only way to get it out of there in a high flow is to pump it over the levee. And that's what that lift station does, I believe.
Okay. I was told that the, you know, when I met with staff, that that was a sewer lift station.
Michael and I will take a look at it.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
But either way, it would not be good if that thing could pump over the levee in a 50-year event.
John, did you say there used to be a generator there?
I thought there was a generator inside that fence. Let me just say something. It might have been shared with Cantova Lift. It might be that old 50 kW one there at Cantova Lift that they might be shared.
Oh, they just wheeled it over?
Just wheeled it over and fired it up if there was a power outage at Cantova or at FAA Lift. Because you have some time.
Tom, I'm showing on the GIS, I'm showing that is the FAA Lift is a sewer lift station.
That's what it says, but it doesn't appear to be really having any sewer go into it at that point because John, it goes to the right towards Cantova.
Yeah, but it's showing the force main. It wouldn't, I don't believe. Oh yeah, it does. If you scroll in, there's a manhole 704 comes into the lift station. I think that is a sewer lift station.
Well, then it goes from FAA Lift to Cantova Lift to Main Lift North.
I'm looking. Let's see. I think it goes gravity. It gets the gravity on Cantova Way. Then.
Hey, Amelia, would you show the picture I just emailed you, please? Let's give Amelia a chance.
Yeah, it looks like it goes to Main Lift North. No, it goes to Cantova.
Amelia, are you there?
Yeah. I'm finding the picture on my email.
Yeah, I just sent an email with the photograph.
Tom, okay.
Michael, give Amelia a chance to bring up this photograph, then you can talk about it.
Tom, you may remember that at one time we were going to take a propane line over to Cantova so we could put a propane generator in there to replace that old 50 kW unit. And that got nixed.
So I took.
Okay, I'm going.
It's pretty good. You could see it there for a second.
There you go. Is that it?
Yeah, I took a quick look. So, Michael, why don't you describe what you're talking about here?
Okay, so if you go, if you take your little cursor all the way to the left where the lift station is at, that's where I believe the lift station is. And take your pointer going to the right. As you can see, it's pumping up to one more manhole over to the right. That's where it goes to gravity, I believe. And then it looks like it goes down the line.
All the way to Cantova Lift.
And Cantova, from Cantova, it goes to Main Lift North.
Oh, and there's Cantova Lift, isn't it?
Yeah. The bright green line is the force main. It's hard to see at that resolution, but yeah. So I'm told that doesn't have, I haven't been out to that site, but I'm told it doesn't have generator. So we need to go out there and make sure, of course.
Well, now you've got, when that was put in, the only thing that was there was the FAA building. And now there's Snyder's Development, the Catholic Church added to that. So there's probably two times the sewer flow that there used to be.
Yeah, and I think you're right about one thing, John. I think you're right that they probably took that generator from Cantova and they were thinking that they could wheel it over to FAA if they needed to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's public agency have done things like that in the past. We're kind of moving past that. We want everything to have automatic transfer and switch gears, but it's kind of old school. And so it's possible that may be the reason that if there is no generator at FAA, because Cantova was so close.
Well, that's a lot of scrambling around, isn't it? If
I know, get, one to the other.
Get ugly.
It doesn't make any sense to me, but who knows? So we'll take a look at that. And, you know, if it needs a generator, it needs a generator, especially with all the business there.
Well, and there's, the interesting thing there's is a fence we don't around have, that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Randy.
There's a fence around that pump station, right?
Yes, there is. So slatted fence.
Spot to put a in-place generator and so on and so forth.
Yeah. That doesn't require a big lift. You're only lifting that up maybe 10, 12 feet, right? To get it up to the gravity.
Yeah, if that.
If that.
But probably only needs a 50 horse, maybe a 25 horse. Not a lot of sewage. It's probably 8,000 gallons in a day. It's probably 6 gallons a minute max, maybe.
Yeah.
So back to the issue at hand, all these lift stations and the vulnerability. Mike, it's your intent to separate these all out and figure out exactly a plan and more importantly, the cost of doing each of these. And we discussed whether some of them actually needed to be done and some can be done right away. What is your time frame for coming up with the information and costs?
Well, this is going to be included in as a part of the reserve study. So there's going to be, you know, as a part of that reserve study, there are remaining useful life, stuff that needs to be replaced now, and there's going to be costs associated with these items. And so we'll be able to take our reserve list and update our capital improvements program every year based on need. And that's kind of what the nexus of where this kind of meets and intertwines. And this is where some of this information began is just as I'm going through these listed items with my staff, I'm gathering more information that I didn't have before that we can put into this plan. So basically, long story short, we're going to be at cost for these things. We're going to have timing as part of the reserve study and as part of our capital improvements program. Some of the stuff we're going to do, I may ask the board to do sooner or later, depending on what we have, where we are in the budget for this fiscal year.
Seems like the majority of this stuff is I was assuming was this year type of work. So back to my question, reserves or not reserves or doing it right away or this year, what's your time frame for getting this information together?
Oh, I would say the next month.
Okay, great. That's what I was.
Okay. Hoping. Yeah.
Okay.
And this is, like I said, I don't mean to alarm anybody. This is just information I'm sharing with the board. A heads up. So when you hear about these things, you know, in the next, you know, 1 to 1 month to next 1 to 12 months, it'll be familiar.
Sure. No, and this is appreciated. This is all very well done. Obviously need a little bit more research on some of this stuff. But the heads up is appreciated. So.
And I do have a comment from the public if you're ready for a comment on this topic, Randy.
Certainly.
Okay.
Or would you like to speak first, Marty?
My question is, there's got to be some funds in reserves to take care of some of these, is there not?
Tom, well, you want to take that?
Well, Marty, I've been asking that question for as long as I've been on the board, and I still haven't gotten an adequate answer. And I think that's probably a bigger discussion for a different day. But I don't know why we don't have maintenance, and I'll use an example, maintenance committee over at RMA wants to replace a pickup truck, and they look in the reserve studies and they know exactly how many dollars are available out of reserves to replace that pickup truck, whether it's enough or not enough. At least they know how much money is in the bank to make that purchase. And I don't think CSD is anywhere near having that type of information. I see this as a big ball of wax, and we've got costs and we've got replacement costs, and I think we're, you know, 20% or 30% reserves. And
that's the problem. We've been reserved.
That is the problem.
We show it on paper, but we don't have the funds to back it up.
And this is my responsibility. This is Tom. It's my responsibility to get the reserve report to you. And it's the highest of priorities prior to us moving forward with the budget, because we need this information, as I've been talking about for the same amount of time, before we can start the budget process for next year. So I believe we're just about there. I believe with the holidays behind us, we can now focus on producing a reserve report. Probably, like we've said before, it's probably going to require another special board meeting so we can publicly go through all these numbers and have a better idea of where we're at before we start producing proposed rates for next fiscal year.
But, and I get all that. We're in the big picture, the big ball of wax. We're X amount of reserves, and we know we're under reserves. So we gotta bite the bullet and tell people they gotta pay more, because that's the only way we solve our problem. But in the micro, Tom, will our reserve study tell us that, okay, we need a generator at the FAA lift station? Is there a line item in the budget, in the reserve budget, that says, here's how much money you have or don't have for that lift station to add a generator?
The answer to that will be yes, we'll have that answer. There's a lot of historical cleanup that we're doing as part of the, which is why it's taken so long. But yeah, we will be able to tell you that we need to replace X number of generators, lift stations, pumps, valves, et cetera, in the next 5 years, and over the next 30 years, how often they get replaced, as well as how much money is going to be required each of the next five fiscal years in a very, you know, precise manner, you know, pending emergencies. So yes, that's what we're striving to produce.
So there will be a line item for FAA lift station, or yes, FAA lift station generator, and here's the amount of money that's in the bank that's reserved for it, and it's obviously not enough, but this is how much is there.
And we have to keep in mind, with development comes impact fees for capital improvements, but we also collect fees every month from every ratepayer to go into our funds, into our reserve funds, to pay for stuff like this. And the board made an important move last budget cycle to nearly double the contributions into the reserve funds. And we're tracking those, where the accounting is getting straightened out, and basically the inventory of the fixed assets and the timing of their replacements is being fixed right now. It's what Michael and his staff have been spending a lot of time on over the past few weeks, as well as Paula with her staff. And those two, the finances and the assets, need to merge into a reserve report that we bring forward and we lay out for the board to review prior to starting to produce proposed rates for next fiscal year. I hope that addresses your question, Randy.
It did, and I'm anxious to see the reserve study and what it looks like. So, anything else on the lift stations?
Yes, I do have a comment from the public. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
James Q. Public. Go ahead, Richard.
I have some questions about spending some of the money for some of these lift stations. For instance, the Cantova lift station. It's listed the issue as it's a 1950s towable generator with only one functional leg left and only runs 230 volts. My reaction is big deal. I mean, I think it never had more than one functional leg. That's the way it is. And do you ever need more than 230 volts? I mean, if that generator died, how long would we need a power failure for there to be a problem? And, I'm not sure there's a problem other than, I'm not sure it was Randy or Martin mentioned aesthetics, but, replacing that I saw was going to cost about $35,000 and we're going to spend that for aesthetics. I question the whole premise of replacing that. I mean, do we need a generator there other than what we have? And then at the FAA lift station, there's no generator there, supposedly. I don't know. I think there's a drainage lift station there and a sewer lift station. I mean, there's two fenced in areas. And as far as sewage in that area, there's not very many people down there flushing toilets. So, and if there's no generator and the power goes out for a few hours, maybe a few days, I don't know there's a problem. So I, at least on these two that I'm a little bit familiar with, I question whether it's worth spending the money. And for the Cantova lift station, $35,000. I mean, one of the questions is if that generator died right now and then the power at the same time went off, I mean, what would you do? You'd get another generator, tow it in, and run it for however until the power came on. I mean, that's anyway. I question spending money on those two things.
The real problem is it happens during a 100-year storm, and 189 mobile homes have sewage backed up in them. Nobody's going to be happy.
Right. Richard, your comments are duly noted. Any other comments or
no
questions on lift station vulnerability?
Not here.
Martin, anything on further on this?
No, just thank Michael for advising us what's on the horizon. So thank you, Mike.
Very good. Let's move on to item number 6 on the agenda, which is director and staff comments. Staff first. Staff, any comments?
Michael, would you mind talking about, this is something that came up too late for us to post on the agenda, but would you mind talking a little bit more about the tertiary pumps?
Oh, yeah, sure. So we would like to bring the pump rebuilding to the January board meeting. I'd like to get those approved if possible. Like we had discussed a little earlier, time is of the essence if we want to have the tertiary system ready for creating recycled water come late spring. Maybe we could wait another month, but my preference would be to not, just in case, because something always seems like it goes wrong when you send a pump out.
Sorry, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, yeah. So it would be my preference that the board take a look at approval of accepting the lowest quote for rebuilding the pumps and placing them back in service so that we're all ready to go for recycled water.
And Randy and Mark,
this was Kirby Pumps.
Yeah, they were the low bid.
And the dollar amount was how much?
It was about a little under $42,000.
And we got how many quotes?
Three quotes. The highest being 64,000 and change.
Now,
go ahead, Tom.
I would say that if these prices came under the $25,000 mark, I would have gone ahead and given that we went through the legally acceptable bid process with my authority of utilizing reserve funds up to $25,000, we would have brought it to the board as a decision that I had made. But given that it's over my limit, and given that I don't want to run into the pumps are in Texas on a pallet waiting to be shipped again, like we suffered through last spring, I asked Mike to be prepared to talk about it during this part of this meeting and what we're requesting. And I'm not sure if we're following the exact rules, but I think we are, that the committee allow us to bring this directly to the board for approval because of the issue with how the lead time on getting pumps repaired and getting parts right now for pumps is tremendous. And I just want to try to avoid waiting another month before we get these pumps in the repair process.
Sounds totally reasonable. Martin, any objection?
No, I agree with that. We need to be proactive to make sure we can start when we want to start.
Very good. So be it.
Those are all our comments, I believe.
Okay. Martin, any comments, suggestions?
No more.
My only comment, and Mike, I think you hit on it, that you're going to come up with costs for all this stuff and it'll be part of the reserve thing. But as I recall, when I first came on board and did the tour of the treatment plant, and they talked about replacing those membranes, and I was told an approximate value of what each of those membranes cost, and I remember just being totally astonished and my jaw dropped. I know that you can't get a valid quote on the replacements until we're actually ready to do it, but it sure would be interesting for us to see those costs as part of this study that you're doing as far as the reserves. So
that's part of it, and
just to get us in the ballpark, because
I think
everybody's gonna sit up straight and be at attention when they hear the numbers that are coming down the pike.
It's probably seven figures.
Yeah.
That'll be part of the reserve studies, being able to get at least some 40,000 foot estimate.
Yeah.
Won't the manufacturer give you a quote?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to get a quote.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. I have no other comments or suggestions, which brings us to item number 7 on the agenda, and so we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks, Randy. Thank you, everybody.